Our true crime podcast deals with sensitive issues, including some that little ears shouldn't hear. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
I love me some Sesame Street.
And that was for
Billie Jean,
because she loves our singing.
I know,
she loves
I can't it. Wait till she gets our greatest hit album.
You know, she tweeted at us and said, can you please just do a whole podcast on your singing?
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely.
It is. It's fantastic.
She says she rewinds it over and over.
I know.
It's true.
I know. That's why she's going to love the Greatest Hits album.
It's coming in December.
Yep.
Makes just a perfect gift. Mm-hmm. You can get the Chia Pet, the Clap On, Clap Off Light, and our album. Mm-hmm. They're all, it's a package deal.
Yep.
We do. Anything new with you?
No, not at all. We do want to give a shout out to Cynthia and Terrence. They gave us a shout out on Twitter.
Thank you guys. And
Terrence,
that's so nice.
We're so working on our sound. Hopefully you can hear this. So
is this thing on? Click, click. Is this thing on?
We're working. We're not smart, but we're trying.
You know, I don't know if we've shared this with our people, with our podsters, but when we went to have the Shock Studio, when we went down to have our sound checked, that they kind of laughed at us and they were surprised that we made it as far as we did with what we have.
And what we knew.
And mm-hmm. what we know how to do. So
yeah,
we're getting there.
We were kind of a charity case that they took on. So
Terrence, by episode 100, I promise we're going to be good.
We will.
Maybe.
We might even be so loud that you won't even need the audio on.
It'll almost be like we come to your house and sit in your house on your couch.
Yeah.
And you know,
just chat about
just
it.
Just chat with you. It'd be
and
great.
And you know, I'm always up for a trip overseas. So
if where's Terrence from?
Ireland. The County Cork.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go back.
Right.
Hey, Terrence, why don't you send us some money, okay, to support
our
the
trip.
Pod,
mm-hmm.
but we'll really are going to use it as a trip to come over and see you.
Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
We'll record live from your house.
Right on the couch.
Or a bluff.
Yeah, wherever.
Or something. Okay, you ready to
I'm ready
get
to
the
go.
Show going?
What do you have for me?
Well, you know, we've featured a lot of bad people, but
yeah,
it's true.
Putting it nicely.
But today I have our very first serial killer. So anyway, you ready to get started?
I'm ready.
And we're going to talk about this. I have some views on it, and you're going to have some views on it too, I'm sure. Okay?
Always.
So here we go. Like many killers, he preyed on those that lived on the fringe, those that if they went missing wouldn't send any red flags up. He preyed on the poor and the desperate, and he offered them something they needed. They were runaway kids, homeless men, or people that had few choices. Now, he was getting good at this because, well, he'd been doing this since 1997. You see, it was in 1997 when 19-year-old David Mitchell's body was found near Hahnville. It was just 6 months later that the body of 20-year-old Gary Pierre was found in St. Charles Parish. In July 1998, the body of 38-year-old Larry Ronson was found in St. Charles Parish. The location of where the bodies were found, as well as some of the common characteristics the men shared, led police to confirm what they had already suspected. There was a serial killer loose in Louisiana.
Ooh.
I love Louisiana, as
Louisiana's
do you.
So much fun.
I love New Orleans. Yeah, we're going to go.
For Crime Con.
CrimeCon, you ought to give us something free for that, by the way.
Just 2019. Saying. Can't wait. CrimeCon, we were at CrimeCon 17.
18.
18, and now 19.
I love free stuff.
Well, we made good friends at CrimeCon.
We did. So the victims ranged in age from 17, which was the youngest, to 46, the oldest. And while many were gay or bisexual, many were not. Most of the victims were asphyxiated. Some were raped, and many were barefoot.
Ugh.
The bodies were disposed of in remote areas, which told authorities the killer was familiar with the area, and they were found in 7 different South Louisiana parishes, all suburbs of the New Orleans area. All were found bound and had been killed in similar fashions. Most of the victims were picked up outside of Huma, which is Highway 182, also called New Orleans Boulevard, and near the end of the road. Now, at the end of this road, there's a bunch of those seedy no-tell motels.
Yep.
And we know what those are known for. Drug activity, prostitution, homeless people moving in and out.
Okay? All the stuff that Camille likes.
All the stuff that I love.
Right.
It's true. Mm-hmm. So another pickup area or target area where victims were picked up was known as Mechanicville, which is primarily populated by African Americans. Now, his killing preference was the young black male. However, if he couldn't find one, he would take what he could find. The first body found was David Mitchell.
Was it his sexual preference was the African American male, or was it just...
No, that's what he liked. That was his preference. He was attracted to young African Americans. Yeah. The first body found was David Mitchell, age 19, which I stated above, and he was the first in a long string of nearly 24 homicides that the task force would eventually investigate, the final victim being found October 15th, 2006. So I'm going to take you back to the summer of 2005. That area down there, the people, the police, everybody knew something needed to be done. Louisiana, in connection with the state attorney's office, made a task force that would gather and begin to dive into these missing men and hopefully find a killer. During the years of investigating these murders, police would often wonder how he was able to do this all by himself, you know, to be able to overtake all these young men. And all these young men are healthy. I mean, he liked young men, younger men.
Right, because you said they were in their teens, most of them were in their teens. Some were older.
The youngest was 17, but the oldest was 46. But they were generally in their early 20s. That's like right in that area.
Right, physically fit.
Yes. Yeah. So during the years of investigating these murders, police would often wonder how he was able to do this all by himself. To be able to overtake these young men, there had to be a method in which these men would comply, maybe feeling safe, and ultimately, that would be their downfall.
Right.
The question, and many more, were about to be answered by the least likely person, a man who had survived his encounter with this serial killer.
Wow. Was there only one survivor?
No, there was a couple more. But you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, things happen, right?
Unreal.
So it was not long after the task force was assembled. The case broke when an ex-con named Ricky Wallace told his parole officer, Officer Bill Knoll, quite a horrid tale. Officer Knoll received a phone call from Wallace's mother, who told Knoll that she believed her son may somehow be involved with the killings.
Good for her.
So her son had been having nightmares where he was tied up and being tortured. So she assumed maybe he was part of it, not quite realizing the true story, which was that he was a victim.
Right.
So Wallace proceeds to tell Officer Knoll that one day he was walking down the street, just walking, and he noticed his vehicle. Vehicle passed him up, turned around, drove past him again. Then it turned around and drove past him yet again. The car approximately did this 4 times before it pulled over to actually speak with Wallace. The man inside the car showed Wallace a picture of a woman and asked if he would like to make some money. How would he make this money, you ask? All he would have to do is have sex with this lady, who is identified as the man's wife, while the man watched. Ew. Right?
Yeah. No.
Wallace accepted and hopped into the stranger's car.
To each their own, though. You
know? It's fine. So Wallace accepted and hopped into the stranger's car. They traveled to an area known as the Bayou Blue. When they arrived, the man told Wallace he needed him to undress, lie on his stomach, and he was going to be tied up. Wallace declined, but the man was persistent and tried to talk him into it. After a bit of arguing, the man finally agreed and took Wallace back and dropped him off. Wallace never told anyone about this encounter. The police now knew how he was capturing his victims, at least his heterosexual ones. But what they struggled with was how would people would fall for this? But you know what they didn't take into consideration was actually pretty simple. These were not the same type of people in the same situation as these victims. These victims were, you know, desperate. They were hungry. They were trying to survive. They didn't have a roof over their heads. All the police officers obviously had all that. So they weren't taking into consideration the type of victims that he was targeting.
Right.
So what they were doing was doing what they had to do to either get money for drugs, money for food, money to survive.
Right. That's horrible.
So Officer Knoll told Wallace he wanted a statement and could he drive them to the station to get it. Oh, and by chance, do you remember where this guy lived? Wallace did know where, and he told authorities about it. It was a camper trailer located in a field in the middle of nowhere, but not far from everywhere. It was the home of 42-year-old Ronald Dominique. After getting the name, police recalled another incident that took place at his home. This is the one I was referring to a while ago. 4 or 5 years prior to this, a man wearing only a pair of jeans and with an electric cord tied around one arm dove out of the window of Dominique's camper trailer and ran around the trailer park screaming for help, shouting that Dominique was trying to rape and murder him. Most residents knew Dominique was gay and chalked up the disturbance to some kind of kinky sex thing.
Oh, my Lord.
Now, you remember Jeffrey Dahmer. Right. The same thing happened with him.
Right, with the one escaped, and he's like, oh, it's my boyfriend.
And we had a fight, like, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's wrong.
We need to run the world.
We
telling
do.
You.
It'd be so much
again.
Better.
Okay, back to the story. And when they did get him, this is just a little FYI, he caved. He sang like a canary.
Oh, of course he did.
So, like, this, you know, this could have been stopped a long time
Unreal.
Ago.
Unreal. Unreal.
So anyway, back to the story. Mm-hmm. So to the investigators, there was something more. The two incidents with their indications of sexual bondage reportedly gave investigators a better understanding how so many relatively young men could have been asphyxiated, yet whose bodies showed little or no signs of having been involved in a struggle. So just who was this man who would savagely kill all these men? Ronald Dominique spent much of his youth in the small bayou community of Thibodeau, Louisiana. Now, Thibodeau sits between New Orleans and Baton Rouge and is the type of community where everyone knows a little about each other. Sound familiar?
We grew up in one of those towns.
We sure did. He attended Thibodeau High School, where he was in the Glee Club and sang in the chorus. As often as is the case with young gay teens, his classmates remember Dominique being ridiculed for being gay. So as Ronald grew older, he began to accept his homosexuality by visiting local gay clubs. Now, most of his adulthood, Dominique struggled financially and would end up living with his mother or other relatives bouncing around. So in the weeks before his arrest, he was living with his sister in a single wide trailer. He was suffering from declining health, having been hospitalized for a severe heart condition and forced to walk with a cane. Mm.
And he still was able to get these people into his house.
People are crazy. People are crazy. Dominique's past arrest indicated he was struggling internally early on, but no one seemed to notice or step in to intervene. So let's take a look at some of his issues.
Okay.
So June 12th, 1985, he was arrested and charged with telephone harassment. He pled guilty, paid a $74 fine, court cost. May 15th, 1994, he was arrested and charged with driving while intoxicated and speeding. Okay, those aren't so bad yet, right?
I mean, it's not good to drink and drive, but...
So August 25th, 1996, remember I talked about the gentleman that jumped out of his window?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So Dominique was arrested on forcible rape charges and booked on a $100,000 bond. According to the neighbors, a partially dressed young man escaped from the window of Dominique's home in Thibodeau, screaming that he had tried to kill him. When the case was brought to court, the victim could not be found to testify.
Huh.
In November 1996.
Where was he?
The judge continued the case indefinitely. This goes back to the victims he chose. If you're homeless and you're
so
on drugs.
He, like, didn't disappear because he was killed. Well, we don't know.
We don't know, really.
But this man was a transient, and so we didn't know where he ended
up. Or a young drug user, right?
Right. Got you. Okay.
In May 19th, 2000. He received a summons to appear in court on disturbing the peace charges. Since it was a misdemeanor, he was able to plead guilty and pay a fine to avoid appearing in court. That's not so bad. February 10th, 2002, arrested in Terrebonne Parish after he allegedly slapped a woman during a Mardi Gras party. According to the reports, Dominique accused a woman of hitting a baby stroller in the parking lot. The woman apologized, but Dominique continued to verbally assault her and then slapped her across the face.
Oh, lovely.
He was arrested and entered a parish offenders program instead of standing trial. He met all of the conditions in the program in October 2002.
Wow.
So he's got some issue.
A bit, yeah. I would think so.
So after Wallace had pointed out where he lived, pointed out where this he was taken by this serial killer and all of this.
Right.
Ronald Dominique was arrested and he voluntarily provided a DNA sample, which connected him to two Jefferson Parish murders.
Hmm.
Now remember, he's known for, and I bet you there's more. I bet you there's more. There has to be. Over
But how many was
23 men. And I just, those are the ones they know about.
But
I
you
mean,
would think if
this is
he's
Louisiana.
Caught, he would tell more. Unless he doesn't remember.
Well, see, and here's the, we're going to get to that in a minute because it's kind of, we'll get to that in a minute. Over a two-day interrogation on December 1st, 2006, Dominique confessed to the rape and murder of at least 23 men over a 10-year period starting in 1997. Dominique confessed to the rape and murder of at least 23 men over a 10-year period starting in 1997. All of these were in parishes in the suburbs of New Orleans. He was charged with multiple cases of rape and first-degree murder.
Good. I'm glad they got him.
So now we're going to find out how this all went down, how he did it. He explains to police, okay, how he was able to snag the heterosexual as well as homosexual men and, you know, how he actually wasn't that picky. He preferred African-Americans, but he'd take what he could get. Because he's a killer. Dominique prowled the streets of Houma and nearby towns at night, usually between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. Now, he's looking for men who were down on their luck, as we talked about. Mm-hmm. Homeless men, drug addicts, alcoholics, men willing to do what it takes to make some money for whatever they needed. Now, there were a few things that made Dominique successful in his ability to kill. It was his ability to make his victims feel at ease and his smooth manner when he would approach them that he was able to persuade the victims to have sex for money, usually back at his camper trailer. He told officers he would see his victims and try to determine if they were heterosexual or homosexual because his script, what he would approach them with, would change according to his determination.
With a cane?
Mm-hmm.
I would.
He looked really harmless.
Right, exactly.
I mean, he just looked like a middle-aged guy. Kind of stocky, kind of overweight, just kind of a normal guy.
Exactly. And plus,
and if you're 19 and you're fit and you're, you know, you'd be like, oh, this is easy.
Yeah, or, you know, he's got a cane. He's not going to be able to hurt me.
But that all goes back to why he needed to have them tied up.
Right.
Right. If you approach a gay man and say, hey, you want to have sex with this lady? You'd be like, no.
Exactly.
But then again, maybe you would approach a straight man and gay sex, you know, gay for pay. If you're desperate.
Gay for pay. Exactly. It's been done.
It has been done. Dominique, who had never been married, told investigators that if the men appeared to be straight, he would show them a picture of a woman he claimed was his wife. He allegedly told the men he was looking for a sex partner for his wife while he watched, then offered them money to do this. Hmm. If he deemed them to be homosexual, he would ask them to have sex in exchange for money.
Right.
So the one thing that didn't change was the request he asked of any man he brought home. Now, this is what I find so terrifying. Frankly, a little bit opposite of what I would think would occur in most of these circumstances. You let me know what you think. So he would ask permission to tie up the men. If the victims refused, meaning, no, you cannot tie me up, he simply let them leave. Let them go. They were fine. They weren't raped. They weren't murdered. They were fine.
Well, that kind of makes sense because he, like we said before, he has a cane. So if he couldn't tie them up, he couldn't really overpower them.
But you know, like a lot of killers, I don't know what the statistics, a lot of times if you comply, you know, it's, you would think that maybe he'd just let them go, but I think it was the rape part that he liked and knowing that they would go tell on him.
And taking control and...
Yes.
Right. That could be.
So it was this ploy, which had worked for all these years, but was also the one that led to his downfall and his arrest. The prosecutor sought the death penalty in the case, but that was not to be. Dominique would be given life in Louisiana for the murders of the two men he was charged with killing. Now, again, I thought this was so interesting that he killed so many people and he gets life. But here's the interesting part. So previously, when he was in jail waiting for that young man to come forward and testify and then they couldn't find that man,
right,
he had to do 3 months in jail. It was awful to him. Right. He said he would never, ever do that again. So that's why he killed all these people, because he didn't want to go back to jail. Oh. So he just killed them. 20 plus people. Insane.
It is insane.
Jim Bernazzani, special agent in charge of the FBI in New Orleans, said, quote, this was the most significant serial killer case in the country in terms of the number of victims and the length of time he was at it. Sex was the motive. Sex was behind all the killings, end quote.
Then why wasn't it on the news?
And that's where I think that a couple things. Let me finish this out and then we'll go. So the really sad part in most of this is that he could have been caught early on. This maniac could have been stopped.
Exactly.
And a lot of those lives could have been saved. Dominique told investigators he made the decision to start killing his victims after raping them because, like I said, he had spent the 3 months in jail and he just couldn't face jail again.
Well, maybe not rape anybody in the first place would have been a better idea than just
rape them. Or how
about
seek some help? Yes, I get
killing
it.
Them. Yeah.
Yes. I guess the sweet justice in this is that he did not ever want to go back to jail. and he ended up getting life. I mean, right. Death would have been an easy out for him.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't have been much of a punishment.
Correct. That's the case. I have a list of all the victims. I was going to name them, but honestly, I don't think it does them justice. I think it would be better for you to see their names. And if you hear it, I don't know. I think it would be better to see it. I'm a visual person, so I like to see that stuff. But a couple takeaways from this. I think because the victims were poor, you know, Hispanic, African American.
They were the unseen of America.
Yeah. I think that it didn't get that much attention. And I think that's ridiculous. A travesty.
It is a travesty.
I mean, a death is a death, and it's somebody's kid. It's somebody's
Everyone
son.
Everyone matters. Every life matters. It doesn't matter. I have no words.
Yeah. It's disgusting, frankly. The documentary on Amazon is called
Bayou Blue, isn't it?
Bayou Blue. Check it out. It's good. Poor little Ricky Wallace. Drugs have not done him any favors.
Well, I'm sure he's self-medicating.
Well, it's been several years, and still, you just can tell the poor guy's still on drugs. It's pretty terrible.
Well, it's self-medication.
Don't do drugs, people, and they're terrible. Anyway, that's all I got for you.
Unreal story. I still can't believe that...
That many people died. I mean, this is 23. You name other serial killers that have killed 23. I mean,
it's huge. And it's just because of their demographics.
Gay, black, Hispanic, poor, drug addicts, homeless, you name it, unemployed. Yeah, terrible.
Horrible. We can do better. Our media needs to do better.
Right?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That was interesting. I'd never heard that one before.
Yep.
Thanks, media. You failed.
Fake news. Just kidding. All right. That's it. That's all I got, Jen.
All right.
Stay tuned. Next, we're going to do our outs now.
If you want to talk to us, DM us or shout us out. What am I?
Shout out. You got it, girl.
Give us a shout out at Twitter. We are at Our True Crime Pod. If you want to send us an email, we are Our True Crime Podcast @gmail.com.
There's Facebook.
Facebook that we usually forget about a lot.
Kind of, I do, and it's on there all the time. I know. I feel so bad. It's our neglected child.
It is. We also have a blog that we've been neglecting lately also, ourtruecrimepodcast.com. And what else can you think?
Please rate us and like us. 5 stars on iTunes.
Yep. Any place.
Spotify, YouTube.
Any place that you like to listen to podcasts, we will be there, we promise. And if we're not there, let us know. We'll get there.
All right, that's all we got for you.